Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the SFLC podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. It's 2018. If you're not accepting credit cards, you're losing money. Plain and simple. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that is dependable/solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com, that is teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business, making it affordable is ours. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5, the Sports Hub, and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com.
SFLC Podcast.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to the SFLC podcast. Here we saw the UFC fight night on ESPN come and go. A lot to talk about. We'll have Steve Dunn coming on to break that down. We'll have Derek Weidman and the gang from Dependable Solutions coming on to talk, and also a little bit of advertising updating here on the SFLC podcast. But before we get into all that, before we know it, it's going to be UFC 234, February 9th. We all know that 233 was canceled. This one's going to be all the way out in Melbourne, Australia. We are joined by another loyal fighter dedicated out of Sikjitsu in Spokane, Washington, coming off a big win back in November at UFC Fight Night 140. We have Austin Golden Boy Arnett. Austin, thank you for taking the time with us here this afternoon.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me on.
We love having everyone on. Again, we were talking a little bit about just how good a relationship I've had with everybody at your gym. So there's no sense for that to really stop, especially considering you have a pretty decent fight coming up against Sugar Shane Young. And we'll get into that here in a few minutes. But before we get into that, you and I were talking about your training and how, you know, you train out of Sikjitsu in Spokane, yet you're about an hour and a half outside of Spokane, where you live. So does the commute kind of wear on you over time, or do you spend your time in Spokane during fight camp 100%?
Yeah, so it's the last few camps, I've kind of got it figured out now of how I do my training. So I live just south of Spokane, about an hour and a half in a smaller town. And my father owns a martial arts school there. He's been my striking coach pretty much my entire life, Frank Arnett, and he still is my striking coach today. And so when I'm not getting ready for a fight, I'm down there, and most of the time, and I help run the school, I teach classes, and I work with my dad and on my striking and everything, and then I periodically come up to Spokane, help other guys when they're in their fight camps get ready and get my own training in. It's not too bad of a commute, but then when I am in fight camp, what I usually end up doing is I spend Monday through Friday up in Spokane training, and then I go home for the weekend, get a little bit of work in with my dad, hang out with the girlfriend and stuff, recover a little bit over the weekend, and then back up on Monday through Friday in Spokane. And that's what I've done for this whole camp, and it's been working out really good.
You know, you bring up having the girlfriend and being able to spend time with her during the camp, something that I don't think I've ever really dove into. What is it like from the girlfriends and dating a fighter? Like, is that something that, you know, takes some getting used to for her? Or, you know, have you known her long enough and all that? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. We first originally started dating when I was like 18. And I started fighting amateur when I was 15 years old. So I've just kind of done it forever in the small town I kind of grew up in. Everybody just kind of knew me as that fighter guy doing that crazy MMA stuff. And so she started dating me really early on when I was just, you know, just a beginning amateur. And then we broke up for a while. We dated for a few years, broke up for a while, and we got back together a while back. And so she's just been around it. She doesn't really know anything different, I guess. She's just kind of accustomed to the lifestyle that I do, and she's pretty used to it.
Does she watch your fights? I know a lot of family members of fighters don't want to watch it.
Yeah, she watches them all. She went to my one in Calgary, Canada, against Dowdy a couple fights ago. She went up for that one. This last one, Argentina, is just a little bit too far of a trip, pretty expensive. And then the same thing with this Australia one. It's pretty far away and expensive to get over there. So she's not going to be making the trip for this one either. But she'll definitely be watching. She gets pretty nervous, but she likes watching the fights for sure. She's a super big fan, actually. She knows quite a bit about the UFC. She keeps up to date on it pretty well.
Does she ever turn into the armchair quarterback on Monday with you? Does she try and talk like technique with you and any of that?
No, she knows, I guess, her place with it all. You know, she's super supportive and everything, but no, she never tries giving me any critique or anything.
So you're telling me that that's not like a good, you know, date night for a girl. As a single guy talking to, you know, a guy who's not single, like taking a girl over to like UFC or any of your MMA classes, you wouldn't recommend?
No, I wouldn't. I try to, whenever I was dating before, it was just, I don't even really bring up MMA at first, you know.
I understand, but no, again, that's got to be a crazy lifestyle. I mean, it's one thing for your parents, but like you said, your dad's been your striking coach, and it seems like that's really been working out well for you. I mean, I know that back in 2018, you know, and this is something that Rick and I had talked about a few weeks back, was, you know, a lot of people from Sick Jitsu kind of just went on this downward slump a little, and you guys had that team meeting.
Yeah.
And talked about, I guess, for lack of a better term, how much it sucked being on the losing end of these fights.
Yeah, you know, it was a tough stretch we kind of went through where it just seemed like nobody could get it going, no one could get on a roll and get on a winning track, and that's tough for the morale of the gym, you know, when you're coming into the gym and everyone's coming off losses all the time and stuff, it just kind of sucks and wears on you, and then it just kind of brings the whole morale of the team down a little bit because, you know, we're all so competitive. We want to win so bad. And when that's not happening, you know, it just fucking sucks. So now to end the year like we did, you know, Tyler Maguire had a big championship fight for one. He came up a little bit short, but he had a hell of a performance and fought great. And then later that day, I had my win. And then Sam won in Bellator, then Mike won in, against Condit, and it was just like a snowstorm, you know, where we all just started rolling at the same time. So now we're out in the gym super high. All the young guys coming up are super hungry, watching all of us win on the big stage, making them, you know, just more excited to train and get to the same level. And so everything's just kind of awesome right now at the gym.
So tell me a little bit about that meeting. Give me the Cliff's Notes version, you know, like, how, obviously the morale was already down and you wanted to change that. So was it all you guys just kind of sat in a group and kind of brainstormed or, you know, worked on, like, how to get the morale up that could get you to those wins where you wanted?
Yeah, it was just kind of, we had a brutal day sparring. It was, you know, people getting dropped, people getting lit up. It was like a super intense sparring session day. And then Rick just kind of sat us down and talked to us all and was super blunt and straightforward and told us, you know, what needs to change and what needs to happen and what we need to do and how we need to approach stuff in training and in our fights, both with our mentality and the way we attack the day and get after it. And so it was just kind of, it was good to hear, you know, sometimes you need someone to not baby you and coddle you and tell you how great you are and stuff. A lot of coaches in this game do that with their fighters, you know, they just tell them how great they are and everything, they're doing good and blah, blah, blah. I'm so positive. It's good to be positive, but sometimes you need to sit us down and be blunt and tell us, hey, you're fucking up here. You need to, this needs to change. This isn't right. And that's kind of what that day was about.
So when that happens, I mean, what does it mean to you personally, having Rick in your corner, having Rick at the gym, you know, knowing that he's not going to coddle you and he's going to call you out? Does that inspire you? Does that make you nervous?
Yeah, it makes it motivates you to perform right in the gym and do things correctly, because, you know, it's nobody likes getting yelled at and told you suck, you know, or something. You know, you want to be doing things right. So it just kind of motivates you to each day show up and be on point and stuff. And I mean, he's super positive too, so don't get me wrong, it's not like he's just breaking us down all the time. Like, you know, when we have a great day, he's telling us that, he's showing us some video, look how this awesome this was. So it goes both ways. You got to be able to do both things. You got to be able to be positive towards your fighters and bring them up, and then you got to, when they're not doing what they're supposed to, you got to be able to be straightforward with them and tell them. And he does a good job at both of those.
Well, you got yourself in a pretty good lineup here for UFC 234 coming up in Melbourne, Australia, against Sugar Shane Young. Of course, you're coming off that win at the end of the year in November against Humberto Bandone. But before we get into the fight itself, we know that Shane trains out of New Zealand. So he's a hop, skip, and a jump, you know, away from Australia. Yeah. It might even be fair to say he might be the favorite in this fight. Do you look at stuff like that when you're training for this, knowing that you're kind of going into his backyard?
I honestly don't think about it too much. I mean, people bring it up to me, but it's like, I don't know. I just never really, but I mean, the only time I think about it is when people bring it up to me. It's like, oh yeah, I guess I am the underdog, or yeah, I guess I'm the out-of-town fighter or whatever. But, you know, it's just going to a fight for me, and I don't really, I just never put too much thought into that, honestly.
No, I understand. And I know that can be kind of an awkward question to get, because nobody wants to sit there and say, well, shit, you're right, I am the underdog. But yeah. I digress. So it's a little different when you're going out of country than when you're staying in country. I mean, even though you'll have a flight and, you know, you could be running into a couple of time zone changes, when you're going to a different country and you know that you're still like meal prepping and you're getting into fight week and, you know, you have that extra couple of pounds that you need to lose, does that change when you end up going to a place like Australia as opposed to maybe going to like Vegas? How does your routine change when you know that that's happening?
The biggest difference that I notice is when you're going to a different country is just getting the right foods you need during that fight week. And it's a little bit tougher. You're just in another country, you know. It's just shopping and going to the store is just different. It's not as easy. And so what I did for the Artita fight, I ended up hiring Lockhart and Lee to handle that part of it. And I'm going to do the same thing for this Australia trip too. It's a stress relief for you. You know, you got so much on your mind. You got so many interviews you're doing all week. You're running around doing photo shoot crap for the UFC and signing posters, and they got you doing all this stuff. And then you add on, now I gotta train too this whole time, twice a day. I gotta get two training sessions in, and then I gotta go out and find the right foods to eat. So being able to hire someone like that to take care of that part of you is just one less thing that I have to worry about. And it went really good. My last weight cut in Argentina was probably my best weight cut yet. And I've had pretty good energy the whole week, being able to train still and everything. So I just decided to go with them again. It worked last time, so might as well stick with it.
That makes sense. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because it reminds me, and you can actually forward this on to Rick. We were talking about how the UFC had signed that deal with the meal prep company that they were going to end up using. It is not free to fighters. There is a nominal fee. I don't know what it is. I don't know that anybody has really come out with what it is. But if Rick asks, it's called Trifecta Meal Prep, is who the UFC's partnered with for this.
Yeah, I talked to them a little bit too about what they're doing. It seems like they're supposed to be doing some kind of deal where through your fight camp, your whole camp, so 6-8 weeks, whatever it is, you're supposed to be able to get those meals delivered to you, but they don't really have it's supposed to be at a discounted price, I heard, but they don't really have a price last time I checked on that, so I haven't used any of that. And then I guess they will be out for the fight week pay-per-views, I believe, in the ESPN, the big ESPN cards. So, but there's just so many kind of unknowns with it right now. I think they're going to be out in Melbourne for this fight, from what I understand, but I just didn't know too much about it. I'm just going to kind of wait for them to get off the ground, because I think this might be their first one they're doing it for. So I'll just kind of wait, see how it goes for other people, and then later on, if it seems like it's working, then I might use them. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the fight that you have going up against Shane Young, because right now, Shane, he looks like he's doing pretty well. You know, he's definitely got a decent record as of late. However, all things considered, you, Austin, have more wins professionally than he has total fights. Now, every fighter is differently, and sometimes that gives you a little bit of a chip on your shoulder walking in. And that chip isn't a bad thing, but is it something that you're cognizant of when you walk into this fight?
Not really, no. I mean, I look at just his overall, how he's been performing his last few fights, and that's all. When I look at anybody, I don't look at too much of their overall record. I look at just how their performances have been their last 2-3 fights, and then I kind of just go off that, and that's the same for me, how my performance has been the last 2-3 fights. And then I don't think about too much about how many fights he has, what's his win-loss record, or anything like that.
That's a good way to look at it. Now, we know that he works out of City Kickboxing, but you also have him by a sizable difference as far as height is concerned. So do you see that being one big plus for you, as a kickboxer is going to come out and not be as long as you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the length and the speed difference is going to be pretty evident in the fight. I think everybody will notice right off the bat if there's obviously a length and size advantage for myself, and then I think everyone's going to notice the speed and athletic ability from myself is going to be quite a bit different too. So I think that'll be obvious as soon as the bell rings for everyone watching that fight.
Doing the prep work for this fight, what do you expect to see out of Shane when that bell rings and he kind of comes out at the first round?
Yeah, so I mean, he's a tough fighter. He takes a good punch. He moves forward. From what I've watched in this film, my coaches have, you know, he fights every fight pretty similar. He's going to move forward, throws high volume punches, throws some leg kicks and whatnot there. Not a super dynamic striker, which, you know, he's not like a Anthony Pettis or something where he's throwing wheel kicks and all kinds of cartwheel kicks and crazy stuff like that. He's a more to the basics kind of fighter, which isn't a bad thing, but it's a little more predictable in what he's going to do. And we got a pretty good game plan on how to attack that.
Without going too much into it, what do you see as being one of those keys to success for you in this fight?
My speed, obviously, is going to be the biggest difference in the fight. And then my footwork angles, not staying on the cage, not letting me pressed back, going backwards, is going to be huge. You know, he works best when he gets guys moving backwards and he gets them against the cage. And I'm not going to be there for that.
Oh, there you go. All right. I mean, of course, everything sounds great. You know, it's application that always ends up coming different.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You can have a great game plan, but you got to be able to put it to work.
Well, give me your prediction on this fight. From Austin Arnett going up against Shane Young, third fight on the fight card in Melbourne, Australia. How do you see this one going down, Austin?
Yeah, I see him pressuring forward early, me angling, being the faster, more explosive striker, and ending up catching him with a shot coming in, or maybe me going forward or something. I don't know. It just depends on how he reacts to my speed and my footwork. But I do see myself catching him and putting him out.
So you're calling a knockout for this fight?
Yeah, definitely.
There it is.
For a finish.
Yeah, you never want to go, right?
I was due for a win in my last fight. Now I'm due for a finish. So I think that's going to happen this fight.
Final question before we let you go, Austin. Rick was talking about how he's going to come back to the States with a wallaby. Are you going to help him with this, or do you have your own thing that you want to bring back from Australia?
Oh, yeah, we're going to get a wallaby. That's the plan. We're going to figure out how we're going to do it, how we're going to attack the situation. But, yeah, we're coming back with a wallaby, that's for sure.
Oh, God, I love it. Like I said, you never get anything. It's never a boring conversation with him. And, you know, you kind of start to see it with all of his fighters as well.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. He's one of a kind.
Well, Austin, we always let you kind of come on and take the time to thank your sponsors, your gym, your staff, your teammates. Take the time right now. That way we can let everybody know where to follow you and how to watch this fight.
Yeah, so my father's gym down in Lewiston, Idaho, Martial Arts America. My dad, Frank Arnett, and everyone there who has helped me get to this point. And then obviously Sick Jitsu, Rick Little, all my training partners up here. Mike, Sam, Terrence, all these guys that have been pushing me this whole fight camp and before this fight camp even to get to this position. Yeah, I'm thankful for all you guys, yeah.
Outstanding. Well, best of luck to you in Melbourne, Australia, Austin. I look forward to seeing you guys back in the States, wallaby in hand, of course. And yeah. Always a pleasure talking with you, and we'll make sure that we are following you for UFC 234. Again, that is going to be in Melbourne, Australia. Catch that fight on February 9th. And on behalf of, well, the SFLC podcast, I'm Ryan Sprague saying thanks and take care, everybody.